That was an interesting trail through the detail of hot, dry rocks. And in renewable terms, you can have a view of a lot of things in that sort of level of detail. I'll just look out a bit further at what renewable energy can do in Australia and then look in at one policy, which is the mandated renewable energy target. What I'll do is look at the major resources very briefly in Australia. How much energy do we use? Where is renewable energy heading? And what the future of renewable energy might be? And then a few conclusions. Australia is very well endowed with renewable energy sources without any doubt. In 8 minutes of this sunshine out here, we get enough energy to run the whole of Australia's energy requirements, not just electricity, everything. That happens every year. It's renewable. So you've got plenty of resource there. The question is the economics of getting it in and using it. We've got plenty of wind resources. I've not tried to quantify them there, but we could supply at least 20% of electricity because there's an issue around how you'd actually run the grid beyond 20% electricity, but you probably can run it. It's just a matter of learning at this stage. Bioenergy sources, such as waste from forestry, agriculture, food processing, landfill gas, sewage, and not mentioned there is algae, which is an emerging one, are all of great interest and have all got enormous potential. Algae, for example, we've had this debate, and it was mentioned when we were starting this talk, you can choose between food and fuel. With algae, you don't need to choose between food and fuel because you use degraded land with water and you have an algal bloom every so often on that, every 10 days or whatever, you can extract oil. Still experimental, but it's a great option. In theory, the production is somewhere between 100 and 250 times the production from agricultural land. So you're not competing with food anymore. So it's a kind of interesting approach there. Hydro, we've had many resources exploited. There's a couple more that we could do, but I suspect there would be objections environmentally to a lot of them, as there have been already. So there's not an enormous amount there. We've heard about hot rock, and I think 450 years of present electricity consumption was a statement that was made at one stage on this particular topic to give some idea of the quantity. There's tidal and wave energy and lots of other forms of energy. So we're not lacking resource in terms of what we're going to do. This is just looking at where the renewable energy sites, this is from our website, the Office of Renewable Energy Regulator. You can go on it and you can zoom in on each one of these dots and find a power station and see a picture of it and find out when it was installed and so on. But this is just looking at the big map. You can see where renewable energy has been historically in Australia. Down there, there's been hydro. There's a bit of hydro in Queensland, a bit further north, and there's a couple of other spots in the country, but predominantly. This is just showing the geographic component. Sugar has been the issue up in Queensland for renewable energy. There's one sugar mill in Western Australia too, up in the Ord. You can see wind. Wind is where you've got good wind resources, and I always argue that you need wind and wires as well in order to develop those resources. And you've got solar, much lower levels of quantities being produced there, but quite interesting projects tend to be in those areas that are sort of designated there. But that doesn't show anything about hot, dry rocks because that's still sitting underground and it's coming. And we see an enormous potential in terms of the analysis we just saw in the last speech. Over $4.5 billion has been invested since 2000 when this measure, the mandated renewable energy target, started. That's quite a large investment for what's known as a very small target. Well, the new target that we're talking about, the 20% target, is 4.7 times bigger than the current target. So that investment will go up and you're moving up a cost curve, so it'll be a bigger investment still. Just to give you some idea where Australia sits in terms of energy use, we're one of the highest emitters. And that's partly because we use a lot of energy and partly because the energy that we use is very carbon intensive. Household emissions vary, but just to give some round numbers, might be 7 tonnes per year per household, and then each car is about 5 tonnes. So there's quite a substantial production from our households, from the way we use our energy, the kind of vehicles we drive and so on. Just another statistic, about 18% of Australia's electricity supplies are used to produce metals of one sort, in particular aluminium. But on the other side of the equation, you need to take into account for every 100 kilograms of aluminium you put in a car, you replace probably 200 kilograms of steel, and the emissions saving in the operation of the car is recovered in maybe 30,000 kilometres. So looking at the high emissions side of it is only one part of the equation. We perhaps only see one part in Australia because we export quite a lot of that. This diagram, you don't need to see all the detail of it, but it is just showing where energy is produced in Australia. On the left-hand side there, that's the supply side, this lot here. And on the other side is, if you like, the demand side, utilisation, transport, commercial, industrial, residential, and so on. What I've put it up here for is to illustrate just the sort of sizes of some of these things. This is a Sankey diagram. The width of that line represents energy and it's proportional on the diagram. Coal, that blue fella there, is exported. That's what's happening with that particular line there. Some of it is used into power stations, and out of the power station comes waste heat, the biggest product, and a little bit of electricity, and that goes off over here. It just gives you some idea of the scale of the problem of the waste energy here, which is of course causing your greenhouse gas emissions. If you look at uranium, we just dig it up and we export it. If you look at natural gas, and this diagram, by the way, is 2003 and 2004, if you drew it now, it would be slightly different, and the statistics have only just come out to draw it. You can see natural gas here. Some is used in power stations. Then it's used for export purposes a little bit. That would be much bigger now. And you can see it's used in industrial purposes over here. Oil, you can see running across here. Some's exported because we have different grades that we need, and some's imported from up here. Some is refined. And you can see there's a bit of waste heat going out there from the refineries, not much. And then you see the oil being used, transport quite clearly dominant, bit in industry and some of the other sides. What you can also see is down here, these are renewables in that supply side. Very small, about 1.7%. Those go through into the electricity system, and you've got bagasse and wood, and you see the wood supply goes into industrial, but in fact that is the bagasse bit, not the wood bit in the component over here. And the wood goes into domestic heating. It's quite large. That's rural heating in Australia. That's 1.7% of this stack of energy, and so it's portrayed as being minute. But if you take it in a selected sector, like you take the amount of renewable energy going in here into that little thin blue line, which is your electricity, it's actually around 10%. Government's objective is to try and get that to 20% by 2020. And that gives you some concept of what happens. This diagram is just almost an aside here. Some of the things we do are quite silly when you look at energy management, but when you look at economics, they happen. You have some coal, you put it in a power station, you burn it in a boiler, and this is remote to where you live. It has a flame temperature maybe of 1100 degrees centigrade. You put it through a turbine, 65 to 75% of the waste heat goes out at that spot, and the useful energy, the remnant, goes into electricity. It's transmitted maybe 200 or 300 kilometres. It then enters your house and it's perhaps used to heat water from 20 degrees to 60 degrees. Here we have 1100 degrees. You then take cold water and mix it with the hot water that you've got at 60 degrees to make a 40 degree shower. And you say to yourself, why do we do this? This is your alternative here. Put a solar panel on the roof and you'll get 60 degrees, even in the most southern parts of Australia, 60% of the time. So why would you do it? Well, it's actually cheaper to do that upper one, but without the price of emissions being put in there. Are we silly? I don't know. Seems a bit odd to me, that's all. Where is renewable energy heading? These elements I'm putting up here are various things that have happened since 1992. You'll see the National Greenhouse Response Strategy, Safeguarding the Future, was the pre-Kyoto talks. That was Australia's position, including the target I run. We will increase renewable energy by 2% in electricity supplies. In fact, we'll increase them by 4.2%, but 2% is the number we said. And then you've got the National Greenhouse Strategy in 1998. You've got Measures for a Better Environment, 1999, and so on. And we go through a whole series of policies that sit out here, and you can read those at your leisure. It was June 2004 before the first energy policy paper came out which linked energy consumption to emissions at an official level, which is quite extraordinary to me that that was the first time it appeared in an energy policy paper. Emissions trading was talked about in 2007, and in September 2007 we had an expanded MRET put forward. That was under the existing government and now under the old government, and now we have the ALP adopting a 20% target. In December 2007, we signed, committed to ratify, and ratification occurred yesterday of the actual protocol. It always takes a long time for these things to happen. Plus, there are many more state and territory policies. You could produce hundreds of policies that are out there. So, is anything happening? Yep, lots is happening. So you've got numerous policies in place. Some areas have targets set, so we're working towards those targets. The initial policy was a no-regrets target, and I'll talk about that in a second as to what that really means. And many voluntary actions have been identified. People encouraged to use green power. That's a decision you make to have 100% if you want green power in your house and so on. And market mechanisms have become popular. Just quickly looking at a market mechanism, and this is the MRET one, but it's really just to illustrate. This is an eligible generator. See how it works. That might be a wind farm. Electricity is produced and sold into the market. Because that is eligible under the Renewable Energy Electricity Act, they can produce a renewable energy certificate, which sits in a registry. It's traded, and each transaction is kept in that registry, so the certificate is always there. And a liable party needs that, or else they have to pay a shortfall charge, and then that's surrendered to the regulator each year. So it's a very simple system. The certificate is 1 megawatt hour, and I think most of you would know that. But the interesting thing is that MRET was actually the first market worldwide that actually used a national target and a certificate trading scheme. I saw the certificate arrangements that were used for sulphur trading, for example, in the US and the Chicago Board of Trade long before we started this. It was done on a one-page spreadsheet. It was really just a tender process. So there was an arrangement prior to that, but this is an active online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So what's it proved? It's proved you can use a certificate trading scheme and you can reduce emissions by increasing renewable energy. And when we talk about emissions trading, nobody seems to be worried about the certificate side of it. However, the EU is worried about the certificate side of it, so we need to be careful how we do the emissions trading scheme. And the government's well aware of that. This is just showing what's happened in renewable energy in Australia. This is the renewable energy production for the 20 years prior to 2000, when the measure was introduced. That's the ironed baseline number of 16,600 from this data back here. And this was the target sitting on top. When it was first looked at, people said, well, the renewable energy's gone up maybe 6% per decade. We're going to go to a 60% increase. It's impossible. And you'll actually see the REC production for the various years. Those were the production numbers of renewable energy certificates. Now, you can argue about what that really means and various other things. And these lines are actually, if you notice, this goes up and down. This was the drought that Bob Hawke broke. And I think we're just seeing the next Labor government breaking the next drought, only it hasn't come through in transmission of electricity yet. These are the actual productions of the baseline power stations, not the ones that count towards the target at the top here. And you'll see it's quite an interesting curve. If you look back to 1980, this graph is showing the percentage of renewable energy in electricity supplies. Basically snowy Tasmania, rural Victoria, some of Queensland already existed as the previous diagram showed you, but the amount of energy that we had in Australia was a lot less in terms of electrical demand. So that same amount of energy, as time went on, as the energy increased, demand increased, went down till it got to around the 10% mark in 1997, and that's what the government was trying to reverse with the 2% mandated renewable energy target. These dots are actually data points all the way through here. And you can see that curve fit is showing it's now starting to kick up. It's actually going to get back to 10%. That's because there's a bit of drought in there too. It's not helped by the drought because a lot of renewable energy comes from that hydro source. So the drought hasn't exactly helped it, in which case that line might be a bit higher, but that's just where the data sits. The target is to make this number not 10% in 2010, but 20% in 2020. And 2020 is just off the screen over there. So it's quite an ambitious target, and it's against an increasing energy demand market too. So what does the future look like? There's plenty of government policies in place, and they're being reviewed. There seems to be an inefficient landscape of policies, and I'll come to a slide that shows that next. And this has been identified by both industry and government. And it was really a ploy on the parts of some government to try and encourage the federal government to increase their target, which did work eventually, and seems to have. So we've got to tidy up that remnant from that. Emissions trading, valuing carbon has arrived. The future looks very bright for renewable energy, but the policies need to be rationalised. So looking at 2008, I've shown on here what was in existence. This was what was in existence in 2008, green power. And if you went back to 2001, it just existed. I drew this diagram in 2001, it existed in New South Wales only. So it spread from New South Wales nationwide. MRET at 9,500, and it's got voluntary surrender as well, which is an interesting market. That's only started in 2006. If you want, you can voluntarily surrender certificates into the mandated renewable energy target. Before, it was only the legislated mandated amount that were accepted and extinguished. You can now extinguish other certificates. And I think in the next few months, we will actually see all the green power that has certificates to verify its system. They use our system as a de facto system. They will all disappear into this voluntary surrender and be extinguished. And that was the concept behind it, that they should be extinguished. And then you look at these other policies that have emerged. We have NGACS in New South Wales, claiming to be the world's first emissions trading scheme, and I think probably was. We've got GECs in New South Wales, gas energy certificates, now 18%, was 13%. VRET, 10% by 2016, the Victorian renewable energy target. NRET, 15% by 2020, the New South Wales target. WARET, 15% by 2020, their target. South Australia has a 20% target by 2014, but because of the geography of all that energy I was looking at to start with, wind is very much concentrated in South Australia and it's easy to sort of exploit there, provided you can get transmission lines. They may have to have no policy to actually achieve that because it'll just happen there anyway. And we've got QRLET, which is the Queensland Renewable and Low Emission Target, which is 10% by 2020. Now, all those policies, the concept is to rationalise them into the one, not all of them, but all the renewable ones. Tasmania, by the way, I don't like them as Tasmania. It was 100% renewable when we started, and it's still about 100% renewable. We've got emissions trading coming along, and the red one there is the 45,000, as mentioned by Adrian, target by 2020. So that's going to tidy it up. So that's that policy. This is a cost supply curve just showing that if you want to go to the size of target we're talking about, and it doesn't have all of Adrian's stuff in there, this already shows you can do it. This is from a study that's on our website if somebody wants to look at it. There's a cost supply curve and you can see it's got quite a plateau. It kicks up just because they didn't study any further than that. These are cost supply curves that you may have seen for Vattenfall. This one was in The Economist at one stage. These are different technologies, what they cost and what they'll abate. Don't be misled into thinking that's the curve for Australia, because the baseline for it should be down here somewhere, because energy costs a third of what it does in Germany, roughly. So the payback it costs to Australia would actually be more in our economy. But it's an idea. You've got different things, and if you take that curve and generically dismantle it, you get a curve roughly that looks like this. It's got four parts. Energy efficiency, no regrets, in other words, pays for itself. Then you've got sequestration in trees. This is just a rough analysis of the approach. There are bits that overlap here, but fuel switching, that's going from perhaps coal to gas fueling. And then you've got a stack of things in this other sector here, renewables, carbon capture, storage, nuclear, and so on. And I guess hot dry rocks would probably sit in there, probably down this end of it as well. So you've got all these options sitting there. So conclusions. Australia has lots of renewable energy resources. Generally costs more than conventional energy. Through the emergence of emissions trading, you now have a carbon price sitting behind that, and energy decisions are being valued differently. Renewable energy can reduce carbon emissions and assist in reducing climate change effects. Lots of policies in place to reduce the carbon footprint. Much progress has been made, but the rate of activity is set to increase as there's an emerging awareness. The future of Australia looks bright when you look in terms of renewable energy and our options. We are not energy insecure in Australia. We've got plenty of choices.